The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Friday, July 13th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on today's show, there were scattered summer showers around the region yesterday, but a new Arkansas Drought Council is planning for what to do when the rain doesn't fall. That's in about 12 minutes on Ozarks. In about an hour on 91.3 on Science Friday, the Summer Science Book Club convenes to discuss Stephen Hawking's A Brief History of Time, plus a look at a telescope messaging network that uses neutrinos to map the sky. What it can tell us about the deep universe on Science Friday, this afternoon beginning at 1, right after today's Ozarks at Large. Summer is blockbuster movie season, and there are plenty of superheroes and dinosaurs in the Cineplex right now. Something different is showing tonight at the Lyric in Harrison, A Princess Bride. Doors open at 6. The movie begins at 7 in the historic theater that first showed a movie in 1929. You can find out more about the Princess Bride showing by going to thelyricharrison.org. There are other events planned for the Lyric through the summer and fall as well. You can find out about them at lyricharrison.org as well. We begin this afternoon's edition of Ozarks at Large with Michael Tilley from Talk Business and Politics. Michael, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, as always.
All right, we're going to do some numbers here, tax collection, home sales. But first, let's start with the starts, the stops, more stops, maybe a start, and then more stops for legal medical marijuana in Arkansas, which voters approved more than a year and a half ago.
Well, yes, November 2016. And so what we learned yesterday, as the Medical Marijuana Commission is going to move ahead, I should back up a little bit, so that the initial legal wrangling is over, and the Medical Marijuana Commission has awarded the 5 licenses for the grow, for the cultivation facilities. Now, almost everyone that is watching this believes that there will be some more legal filings that could halt that process also. But now the Medical Marijuana Commission, maybe because they screwed up the cultivation licensing so much, they are wanting to bring in a consultant to help hand out these 32 licenses for these 40 medical marijuana dispensaries around the state. And I think there's several hundred people that have applied for these. So that's going to be another long process. I think this is beginning to border on either, and I know this is going to sound harsh, but either incompetence or people interested in drawing this out, because this is likely to be late this year, if not early next year, before all the pieces of the puzzle are together so that this medical marijuana can be available, and that'll be over 2 years from when voters approved it. That's just too long. Someone ought to either be apologizing or losing their job. And let's keep in mind, Kyle, the folks in charge of this process have been on record saying that they did not approve of medical marijuana anyway. So very, very frustrating to watch.
Do you think there is a danger in more people losing faith in the state government? You have, you know, the various trials and convictions and guilty pleas that have happened with legislators and lobbyists in the past few months. Now, this, I harp on this a lot, but it goes back to an inevitable erosion of faith in government.
Right. Well, and to your point, one of the 5 commissioners is alleged to have taken a bribe, or excuse me, is alleged to have been offered a bribe. He says he didn't take it. His scores for the company that offered the bribe were much higher than the scores given by the other 4 commissioners. So just doesn't look right. And yes, I think faith in government could be at a new low in Arkansas. And Look, Oklahoma is coming on board with medical marijuana. Louisiana, Arkansas, which was ahead of the pack in the South, may end up being one of the last southern states to get its act together with medical marijuana. So, I mean, if Oklahoma keeps moving forward, my home office may soon be overrolling.
Right. Well, speaking of moving, home sale numbers for Sebastian and Crawford counties are doing well.
That's possibly one of the best segues you've ever done. Yes. Through the first half of the year, sales in Sebastian and Crawford County broke the $200 million mark. Sales in Sebastian County are up almost 14%. And this sales volume, by the way, and it's up a little over 18% in Crawford County. Those are good, healthy numbers. So those two counties had 206, really about $207 million in sales compared to $180 million this time last year. And what's interesting, though, is that the number of homes sold is just slightly higher. It's less than 1%. So it's showing strength in terms of home prices, which is a good sign, very good sign for the economy. And also, and it finished out June, finished out very well. Both counties had $42 million in home sales, and that was compared to $37 million last year. So it's a good trend line. There have not always been good numbers, good economic numbers out of the Fort Smith region, but these show a very healthy home sales sector.
Well, let's continue this conversation with Fort Smith sales tax collection numbers, which aren't bad or good, I suppose. I mean, they're not bad because they're almost where we are through May this year as compared to through May last year.
Yeah, they've been very flat. They've been very disappointing. And look, compared to other cities around the state, Jonesboro and Conway, Northwest Arkansas cities, the sales tax gains in Fort Smith are not good. But at least in the last few months, the sales tax revenue has been improving for the city. In May, the collections were up 0.4%, but year to date, it moved the city higher. It's year to date through May, I should say, January through May, $17.7 million in sales tax revenue. This time last year, it was $17.9 million, so it's just a little off, but it was significantly lower before May. May came in with some pretty good numbers. So we'll keep watching this. The sales tax revenue, that is, as we've said before, is a good indicator of consumer confidence. And, you know, I don't know if, you know, there are, growing retail opportunities in cities around Fort Smith. I don't know if that is pushing some of the numbers down. I don't know if it's online commerce or what. This has been a puzzling trend in Fort Smith with the sales tax revenue, just not meeting budget estimates and not showing near the gains of other cities.
Well, it's one thing perhaps to compare to the estimates and the expectations. Is it completely fair to judge against Northwest Arkansas, which is still one of the five or six fastest growing metro areas in the country, and Jonesboro, which is experiencing, you know, rapid growth as well?
Yeah, maybe not Northwest Arkansas, but Jonesboro is a fair comparison because you have a similar, if you have a metro area with a dominant city, which is the same in the Fort Smith metro. That's a good comparison. You're right, Northwest Arkansas, where you have four or five, there's not a dominant city up there. There are four or five healthy cities. But it would be, if I was a Fort Smith director or the city administrator, frankly, it would be frustrating trying to manage the budget, these flat revenues.
All right. One more thing I want to ask you, and I didn't even mention this to you in our list of possible conversations, so this is coming out of left field. Ha! But after the Razorback baseball near championship in Omaha, the College World Series, finished runner-up in the nation, some people started talking again about how there is maybe an Arkansas curse because We came so close to that championship. Do you really think there's such a thing?
No, I don't think in baseball. I think in football.
Okay. All right.
Oh, but when that foul ball hit the ground, my stomach hit the ground. I knew that was it. You don't, like you said before, you don't do that against a team like Oregon. But no, I don't look if the Razorbacks go to another finals and we have another incident like that, okay, I might start believing in a curse.
Okay. No curses yet. Michael Tilley is with Talk Business and Politics. You can read all about these stories we've discussed and many others at talkbusiness.net. Michael, have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Is the Affordable Care Act healthy? What the Trump administration's newest moves mean for Obamacare? And what's motivating Brexiteers? We hear from a member of parliament who wants Britain out of the EU. No ifs or buts. Plus Russia, a new book called A Terrible Country, is dark and funny. All that and more Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Brexit and more tomorrow morning from 7 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. Ahead on this Friday, the 13th edition of Ozarks, Becca Martin Brown from the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette says it's nothing but good luck for people wanting something to do this weekend, including people who want to watch sticky things blow up at the Amazium. And Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda will host Pat Ryan Key and his new band in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. They'll have a conversation and we'll hear some live music. Stick around. Much more to come on Ozarks at Large.
The Shiloh Museum of Ozark History will host the Northwest Arkansas History Resource Fair, July 14th from 1 to 4:30 p.m. Representatives from over 15 museums, historical and genealogical societies, archives, and preservation groups will be on hand offering tips on researching local history, genealogy, archaeology, Native Americans, cemeteries, and historic buildings. Located in downtown Springdale, 750-8165 or shilohmuseum.org for more.
An Arkansas Drought Contingency Response Network has been meeting. They're developing strategies to monitor and prepare for times of extreme drought in the natural state. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, as a result, an Arkansas Drought Council is forming to deploy recommendations.
To strategically manage resources in a time of drought, the state counts on Edward Swaim. He's chief of the Water Management Division at the Arkansas Water Resources Commission, in charge of dam safety, floodplain management, non-point source pollution, surface and groundwater quantity and quality. He also conducts long-range planning for the Arkansas Water Plan.
The Water Plan is our state's comprehensive plan for anything related to water. And it trends toward water quantity issues, but has quite a bit of quality involved, as well as infrastructure that we need to manage water and to use water.
The Arkansas State Water Plan, mandated by the state legislature in 1969, is organized by 11 major river basins.
The plan has been the responsibility of the commission since 1969. It had been originally drafted in the early 70s. Then an update was done after the 1980 drought, and that finished in 1990.
In 2011, lawmakers asked for another update, which involved 1,000 stakeholders and a technical working group to project water demand and availability through 2050. From springs to natural lakes, creeks, rivers, and aquifers, Arkansas historically has had an abundance of water, but the state's water resources have been heavily tapped, first by agriculture, which consumes 80% of use, energy production 10%, with industry and municipalities taking up the rest. The final publicly vetted water plan in 2015 established new rules on water, from watershed management to water use reporting, Swaim says.
We've also worked a lot on irrigation water conservation. We've helped with other agencies, helped finance some positions for people to go into the field and help farmers reduce their water use by becoming more efficient, primarily with technology and techniques that are newly developed. We also are doing some cost share programs to get meters on wells to improve the data that we use to estimate how much water we use and also to project that out into the future. So there are a lot of different things going on, and one of them is drought planning.
The Arkansas Water Plan also recommended the State Natural Resources Commission develop a coordinated drought contingency response network involving state, regional, local, and agency leaders with constitutional and statutory water management duties, federal agencies, drinking water utilities, organizations, institutions, and the private sector.
We also always see effects on row crop agriculture from droughts. What we saw in recent droughts, including the one in 2012, that was very bad in Arkansas, and the temperatures were high, unusually high that summer. A lot of people had to sell cattle because they could not feed them on their farm because they weren't able to produce hay. And we also saw, an increased use of groundwater. So that causes some loss for the next year because we have to recover that over the winter as the groundwater recharges. Then there are all kinds of other effects of drought that you wouldn't normally expect. Trees die and fall in urban areas. We also have to worry about water supply from municipal supplies. We have small towns maybe that have small reservoirs. Those start to lose storage.
The network drew insight from the National Drought Mitigation Center at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln to identify and monitor drought indicators, assess and communicate potential risks of drought stages to various sectors, and provide a coordinated, consistent message on mitigation and response to drought, including impacts on critical water resources.
The alluvial aquifer is about 84% of our agricultural use, and about 16% is surface water use, whether from a reservoir or a stream. So if you take a town in East Arkansas, the city is probably drawing water from a different aquifer than the farmers are. Now, some farmers are drawing from the deeper aquifer. And in the long run, what we are trying to avoid is increased agricultural use of the deeper aquifers, such as the Sparta.
The Sparta aquifer underlies the eastern third of Arkansas, along with the Mississippi alluvial aquifer. The Arkansas Highlands, in contrast, contain the Ozark, Springfield Plateau, and Rubidoux aquifers, among others. Arkansas also has numerous U.S. Army Corps of Engineered reservoirs impounding rivers. Arkansas lakes and underground waters are at risk during prolonged and extreme drought, Swaim says.
Our traditional method of irrigation has involved a lot of guesswork. We're gradually moving away from that. The Cooperative Extension Service, the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and conservation districts, and also private vendors of sensing systems, of irrigation pipe, and other devices and things that you would buy if you were going to irrigate, are all out in the field trying to explain how the irrigator can save money and, by the way, save water, because they can irrigate a little bit less, irrigate on a better schedule, and by measuring everything, measuring the crop need and the amount of water applied, then applying that more evenly and at the right times, they're going to use a lot less water.
He says efficiencies up to 40% in water savings are available and are being encouraged. In its final report, the network called for the formation of a state drought council steered by the Arkansas Natural Resources Commission Water Management Division. The council includes leaders from the Arkansas Department of Emergency Management, the National Weather Service, Arkansas Department of Health, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and U.S. Geological Survey, who together will coordinate mitigation and response efforts related to drought situations. Swaim says up in northwest Arkansas, Beaver Water District, which wholesales treated lake water to customers in Bentonville, Fayetteville, Springdale, and Rogers, has undertaken exemplary drought planning.
Well, they just started, but that's exactly what we were hoping that would happen around the state. But when they do regional planning, that's really where I think it shows the success of the effort to get ahead of problems rather than to try to deal with them as they pop up. So I think it's a great, great thing they're doing.
If you don't know, the Arkansas Natural Resources Commission is charged with managing and protecting the state's lands and waters for the health, safety, and economic benefit of all Arkansans. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. The Northwest Arkansas Food Bank is celebrating its largest gift of packaged food. The Kraft Heinz Company is donating 4 truckloads of Kraft macaroni and cheese, as well as 1 truckload of stovetop stuffing and Heinz gravy. Mike Williams, Director of Development for the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank, says the product will be given to 160 member agencies who will distribute the food to families in need.
Macaroni and cheese is the most popular thing that families are looking for from us. Everyone knows what macaroni and cheese is. They know how to make it. And so before this donation, we were having to purchase over $100,000 of macaroni and cheese. And we took that challenge to our friends at Kraft Heinz and let them know what we were doing, and they were devastated. And they said, we want to help. And they brought to us the idea of, what if we donated enough macaroni and cheese for you and stovetop stuffing to cover a whole year? And we said, that would be incredible. And so that's why we're here today, celebrating that gift.
The Kraft Heinz Company is staggering its donation by making quarterly deliveries. Yesterday's celebration at the food bank's headquarters in Bethel Heights marked the second installment of the commitment. Sean Boss from the Kraft Heinz Company says one of the company's core values is growing a better world, and that they can do that through the donation of different types of food, not just macaroni and cheese.
We do other things. We specifically chose Kraft macaroni and cheese because it's the number one item for the Northwest Arkansas Food Bank, and we felt like we could make the biggest difference with Kraft macaroni and cheese. But it really depends on the season and the nature. Like, we'll be doing stovetop stuffing and Heinz gravy later in the year as it becomes more seasonally relevant.
Food bank officials estimate more than 65,000 individuals in Northwest Arkansas are currently food insecure. Arkansas's U.S. senators joined with 88 of their colleagues Wednesday to pass a resolution calling for Congress to have a greater role in trade issues. The non-binding resolution is regarded as a rebuke of the president's tariff escalations. The president of the Arkansas Soybean Association, A.J. Hood, says farmers are feeling the pain as they wait for the right prices to sell the remainder of the state's top commodity and top export.
Nobody knows how much to offset. So that's the scary part right now, you know. What we didn't get booked, you know, we're going to have to take that price when we sell it across the scale. So, you know, the dramatic fall in the price, over $2 is going to be pretty detrimental.
Hood says he remains optimistic that the Trump administration is listening and that prices will level out and that foreign markets will stabilize. The Trump administration recently imposed a 25% tariff on $34 billion worth of Chinese goods. China is the largest buyer of American soybeans, and the country responded with its own round of tariffs matching the U.S. dollar for dollar.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
It's Friday the 13th, 2018. With me is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Becca, how are you?
I want everyone to know that I am dressed like Abby from NCIS.
All right.
For Friday the 13th.
Because
that's how you should dress on Friday the 13th.
Colorful and bold?
No, black and goth. And
well, you're not.
You just blew my story.
I'm sorry. Well, if I had known. Okay, sorry. Sorry.
Sometimes.
Okay.
We're just going to talk about fun stuff today. Because
yeah.
I don't have the energy for anything else. And the first one is things you can do with tape.
Like scotch tape?
Well, like packing tape. Like the clear packing tape.
Sure.
If you're cool enough and you wrap enough layers of clear packing tape,
mm-hmm.
you can essentially make a habit trail for humans.
Since you've started this Friday, I haven't understood much of what you've said. And it's just gotten, I don't, what?
Okay. Take a lot of 3M packing tape.
All right.
start wrapping it in layers.
Like flat layers?
Well, like layers in
like a
circles,
ball?
Like layers okay. in balls. You know what a habit trail is?
No, I do not. I don't know who this Abby person is. I don't know what a habit trail
okay.
is.
I'm okay. Okay. Have you ever been to the City Museum in St. Louis?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I love that place.
And you know that they have like slides and tunnels.
Oh,
and
all over the place. You can get lost and it's five stories and they've got a bus that hangs over the side of the building. Yes.
Okay. So the Amazium did not become a five-story building.
No, it did not.
It does not have a bus hanging out of it.
No, it does not.
But it does have tunnels and slides and all these things.
Yes, it does.
That are made of 3M packing tape.
Okay.
You with me now?
Yeah, more than I was.
Okay.
Okay. There are habit trails right now at the Amazium.
Exactly. It's called Tape and Tunnels, and it came from the idea of an exhibit at the Discovery Lab in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the things they're doing for their third birthday.
Yes.
Which is this weekend.
Yes, it is.
So, Moda Studio in Fayetteville and Josh Siebert helped them figure out the engineering of this. Mm-hmm. And then his kids got to test drive it, so it was a good deal. And they made beautiful things out of packing tape.
Okay.
And the secret, they tell me, is layers. Just keep putting together layers.
All right, well.
Until kids can run across it and climb in it and roll around in it. I don't think they'll let me play because I think I'm too big, okay. But I really want to.
But we have these habit trails right now.
Right. And it's open until October.
All right.
And then they also have a great exhibit of, they call it Automata,
mm-hmm.
from the Cabaret Mechanical Theater and Science Projects Museum in London. I think this might be more your speed.
Okay. All right.
It's handmade articulating sculpture mm-hmm. that tells a story.
Okay.
And it has gears and pulleys and cams and levers and cranks and all those things that boys generally love.
Well, all this stuff just sounds like something you got to see to experience.
And then in the outdoor play space, they set up a pop-up adventure playground that has things for kids to make their play space, their habit trail.
Okay.
It's a really fun place right now. It's a really fun place all the time. But
right
now it's extraordinary. And then from 1 to 5 on Sunday, they're going to celebrate their birthday with something they call an extravaganza.
Oh, slime and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I came to the wrong place today. He keeps looking at me like, what?
Well, yeah.
Including around 3 o'clock. This is from 1 to 5. Around 3, they're going to have...
And this is on Sunday.
Sticky things that blow up.
Sticky things that blow up.
It might be Mentos and soda, but I'm not supposed to tell them.
Okay, all right. That's fun.
Okay, so this is $9.50 for 2 and older, but also keep in mind that from 4 to 7:30 Wednesdays in July and August, they have a pay-as-you-can admission.
Yes, they do.
So there's that.
Okay.
Then there's The Tempest.
This I get.
I would argue this is Shakespeare's most fun comedy. And it's an original adaptation by Jennifer Nesbitt at Arts Life Theater.
All right.
How can that not be fun? And she says that she's showing the kids archetypes,
mm-hmm.
universal characters, in these characters in The Tempest. And she's modernized it and cut down the dialogue, but it's got some Shakespeare in there. I think it would be fun for anybody who loves Shakespeare.
Okay.
You don't have to be a kid to go to the shows at Arts Live.
Right.
7 o'clock today and tomorrow, 2 o'clock Saturday and Sunday at Arts Live, $7 to $9. And then there's, I love this description, a comic con for history geeks.
Oh, at the Shiloh Museum tomorrow.
At the Shiloh. We finally come to something.
Yes.
Kyle and I are back together.
Here we
okay.
go. All right.
Here's the thing. People call the Shiloh Museum with the darndest things.
I bet.
They get 350 to 400 serious requests for research a year.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one a day, basically.
Right. Or
more. People who want to chase family genealogy or cemetery locations or land patents. And then they get all the other things. They get Marie DeMarucas told me a story about an elderly lady who came in looking for a photo of her grandfather. And they only had one, and it was terrible. But she burst into tears when she saw it because she'd never seen him before. Huh. Or the lady who was trying to find information about her dad, who died when she was a baby, and she found out that she had a half-brother that she didn't know she had. Mm. Again, tears. And then they got a call about the care and feeding of a baby bird. Because, as Marie says, our unofficial motto is we are all things to all people.
And this resource fair tomorrow sounds
like... to all people. This is kind of how this came about, is that they thought, I think it's their effort to share the phone calls. Mm-hmm. I think. Nobody told me that. You bring all of these genealogy and archaeology and history and all these organizations together, and you have a Comic-Con where people can come and talk to them, and then maybe they'll call them. Right?
Right. But Shiloh will still get calls.
They'll still get calls. But among the organizations participating are the Bella Vista Historical Museum, the Benton County Cemetery Preservation Group, the Boone County Heritage Museum, the Carroll County Historical and Genealogical Society, the Cherokee Heritage Center.
Oh, over from Tahlequah.
Historic Cane Hill Museum, Lowell Historical Museum. And you could just wander in and talk to people. There'll be handouts. There'll be books you can buy.
Genealogical societies are part of this.
Yeah.
So, yeah, one-stop shopping.
This is from 1 to 4:30 on Saturday at the museum. It's at the museum, not at the new meeting hall, because they didn't know it would be open in time. Mm. Opera in the Ozark is still going on in Eureka Springs.
But not for much longer.
No, it ends like the 20th.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go, get thee there. And tomorrow, there's a program on dragonflies at 2 o'clock at Hobbs State Park with photographer Robert Thomas.
Have you ever talked to him?
No.
I'm surprised.
Is he amazing?
He's just really laid back, yeah.
So that ought to hold you till Sunday, and then we got all sorts of other things.
Becca Martin Brown will be back on Sunday, Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9. She is the feature editor at the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
That's the Bill Evans Trio in the background, Someday My Prince Will Come. Hi, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday night and Saturday morning on KUAF. We'll hear more from Bill Evans. We'll also hear from Delfeo Marsalis, the Pat Bianchi Trio, Bruce Barth, and much more. Shades of Jazz right here on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. It's been over 2 years since we've had local musician Pat Ryan Key in our studio. In that time, he's battled cancer, gotten married, and started a new band. Yesterday, he stopped by the Furman Garner Performance Studio with his bandmates Al Halpin and Zach Quam to talk with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. They began their in-studio session by performing a brand new single being released today called Loves Her Rum.
Honey, how about you? lost your shine, go.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and I am inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio with Pat Ryan Key and his band. Welcome back.
Woo!
Drum roll, drum roll.
I like it. I like it. It's been, I think, about 2 years since I had you in here, and now you're back with new people. Tell me about your friends you brought with you.
Well, kind of met them on the road, just picked them up on the way here.
Hitchhiking.
Now, Zach, we've known each other for a few years. And we've actually first played a show, the three of us, 2 years ago at a private party. And it just worked. And fast forward, Al and I, we play shows a lot together. And we wanted to start a new band. And naturally, Zach came to mind. And so the rest is history.
Just fit in perfectly.
Yeah.
All right, so let's see. In 2013, you were here as part of a band, I Do Declare, and then now by yourself, and now you're back with a band again. So what's it like to kind of have a full-size band? Or
full circle?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really exciting. You know, having gone what I've gone through the last couple of years, this is kind of like the first time again. So, and we all get along well together, and we collaborate together, so it's really nice to see how it's shaping up.
You talk about what you've gone through. Would you mind sharing some of what you've been doing the last couple of years?
Sure. Well, in 2016, Al and I started playing together. We had a great year. It was awesome. I just put out a new album, and we were playing all the time. And come October, I was like, all right, I'm going to take a break for this year, enjoy myself, and boom, I get diagnosed with cancer and have to, well, it wasn't even like
Remember,
organized.
It was brain cancer.
Yeah, brain
you gotta
cancer.
Be more specific. You had brain cancer. That's pretty intense.
It's
it was
unreal.
A rare type of brain cancer
right.
that you had that only children get, actually.
Right, right. I was one of, now I've heard this from, you know, from the group of doctors that was one of 100 cases, documented cases worldwide, to have the type of cancer that I had.
Do you know what it's called?
Medulloblastoma. That's my best.
That's
way
probably
to
about right, yeah.
And yeah, it was crazy because I've been struggling with that for a year. You know, it sounds crazy, but at the beginning of 2016, I knew something was wrong. And then come summer of that year, I started questioning if I had a brain tumor, and I got some MRIs through the counsel of my second cousin's mother. She had been battling with brain tumors herself. She had just survived her second operation for a second tumor, and she was like, you know, if you feel something's off, don't take it by chance. You need to be diligent about it. And so I took her advice, but it led to nothing. We did some MRIs, and even my neurosurgeon confirmed that he didn't see anything. So in the span of 5 months, this tumor, being undetectable, grew to the size of a golf ball. And from September to November, my health just dramatically declined. And so the week we found the tumor, I'd actually gone to an ER on a Tuesday. And we go in the ER, and they're like, well, you know, if you're not really having a tragic case, we can't really call in a neurosurgeon. And my wife was so upset. She's like, well, what do I have to do, shoot him in the head with a nail gun? Would that make it a tragic situation? And mockingly, the nurse, you know, said, well, yeah. But they never called anybody. They're just like, well, you're just having neck spasms, so here's some it's not Vicodin, what's Valium. Here's some Valium. And we're like, okay. And so I couldn't sleep at all that night. You know, if I laid down flat on my back, it would make me sick to my stomach. And so I had to sit up, and I can't sleep sitting up. So it was just miserable. And so my wife and my mother's like, well, let's go see your doctor. And we went and saw him, and it was the same thing. He was like, well, you're just having muscle spasms. Here's some Valium. And I was like, well, I just got some Valium. He's like, well, here's some more. And I'm like, wow, this is cool. You know, like getting some muscle relaxers at least. But lo and behold, my health just kept getting worse. So by the grace of God, we got a last-minute cancellation appointment with a neurologist in Fayetteville. And immediately upon seeing me walk, he scheduled me an MRI. He's just like, man, this isn't natural. I looked at your MRIs. I'm not seeing anything, but looking at you physically, just things aren't adding up. And this was on a Friday, so 8 p.m. that evening, I went through an MRI, and that's what led to the discovery of it. So he comes in, neurologist, he's like, well, you have a brain tumor. And I was really emotional because I knew something was wrong. I just knew something was wrong. And if it wasn't for that cancellation, I would have passed away 2 to 3 days later, unknown to us. Because originally the neurologist wanted to schedule us in January. So it was really crazy. There were a lot of miracles within the miracle itself. And they admitted me for emergency brain surgery, and I was in the hospital for 6 days. And I didn't have quite an out-of-body experience, but I did pass away. And coming back, just not looking back. Got this new band here, and we're going to do some cool things.
It's meant to be.
Yeah.
Got things to do.
And the night of my surgery, Al and his family were coming home from a family vacation. They saw the biggest shooting star they'd ever seen, right?
Yep, the biggest.
Brightest. At least that's how they described it to me. I don't know if they're just filling me with fluff, but
no. Nope. My wife prayed for you to get better, and she wanted a sign, and that was the sign. She didn't see it. I saw it. But when I told her about it, she says, well, that's it. He's going to be fine.
We don't believe in coincidences. We all know that stuff happens for a reason. Just sometimes it takes a little bit to figure out the reason, you know, to figure out like the big picture. Like something small happens. Why did that happen? Well, don't worry about it. It'll work itself out. It always seems to do that.
Well, what kind of an impact does an experience like that have on your music? Because I imagine it does.
Well, I don't. It's tough to express.
Let me help answer that question, being his new drummer.
Okay.
Let me help answer that. So having that experience, coming from many band experiences, when somebody has a request about something, you know, they would like you to play, or a way you should play it, or a volume level you should play it at, when that kind of thing happens to somebody, you don't take anything for granted. It's, you know, when it comes to music, especially with Ryan, he doesn't take any of it. You know, this experience is, he had a couple albums before this, as I'm sure a lot of people know, and the experience has not done nothing but humble him, but at the same time has given him, like, it's like a spear when we're writing a song, when we're in that moment. You know, his direction is like a spear just piercing through anything, and we, you know, he can make a suggestion, and it's never, hey, do this. This is what I want you to do. It's not that kind of spirit. It's more of a, hey, I hear it in my head. Can you reproduce it for me? It's more of a request, And he's always very adamant about things being done a certain way. And until you can understand the experience that he's gone through, he's not taking it for granted. He wants things done a certain way. There's no flack behind it. It's a no nonsense. You know, this is what we want to do. I hope you enjoy it.
We still have fun though.
Well, of course. It's always very fun. But the meaning behind it is so much more powerful because, I mean, how many people have written music with somebody that died and came back? You know, and it's like they could be dead. Ryan could not be here right now. Well, he is, and he has a mission, and he's sure. there. This mission has been given to him for a reason, you know. And I think there was a saying, God gives his toughest his hardest battles to his toughest soldiers. And that's exactly what happened with Ryan.
Yep. Make me cry.
And we're here to make it happen for him.
Well, you guys are together now, and you have a new single that you are releasing Friday. We heard it at the beginning of the show. Tell me a little bit about that single.
Well, I'd written the music before my surgery, but the words was a collaborative piece with my friend Mike Townsend, and it was kind of a different path for me because before, I was balls to the wall, rock and roll, and Crank to 11, and now this was more scaled back rhythm and blues. And if it wasn't for Al, he brings the best out of me. We complement each other real well, and this new single's kind of a precursor, if you will, help raise funds for the full project with Quam and everyone else that's within the band. Because the new band is just, I love it. I love you guys.
So plans for a full album.
Plans for a full album. This is a sneak peek into what things can become. And if you like it, I hope you support it and snag a copy. It'll truly mean more to us than you'll know.
If people want to keep up with the progress of this new project of yours, what's your website?
Website is patryankey.com.
All right, gentlemen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We had a great time. Thank you.
That was Pat Ryan Key, Al Halpin, and Zach Quam speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda inside the Carver Center for Public Radio yesterday. The trio performs tonight at The Forge in Bentonville and next week at JJ's Beer Garden and Brewing Company in Fayetteville. You can find out more about their upcoming shows at patryankey.com. And before they left the studio yesterday, they played one more song for us called Keezy.
Live for the moment and pay.
Pat Ryan Key and his band yesterday in the Furman Garner Performance Studio. You can hear musical performances from local and visiting artists almost every Friday on Ozarks at Large. And if you ever miss a Friday Ozarks at Large and want to hear the music, don't forget, we have a podcast version of our show that you can subscribe to for free through services like iTunes and Stitcher. This is Ozarks at Large.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week on Latino USA, miracles do happen. Peru's return to the World Cup 36 years later.
So now the fact that we're going to see our shirt and our national anthem just being sung at the World Cup is unbelievable.
That's this week on Latino USA.
Latino USA, tomorrow afternoon from 3 until 4, right before Weekend All Things Considered on 91.3 KUAF. This is a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Waldron. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for spending part of your week and part of your Friday with us. We're back Sunday morning at 9 with Weekend Ozarks at Large, then all next week, brand new shows. Have a great weekend.